Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masava, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Thursday, December 30th, 2021. Yes, it's still 2021, but it's soon to be 2022. Woo! Anyway, the headline in the New York Times, kind of apropos to the conversation I'm going to have, and it's a very serious conversation. And so this is the headline in a story that happened to be on the front page of today's New York Times. After four killings, state trooper is still on the job. This is in Pennsylvania. Cleared for duty after inquiries by his unit in Pennsylvania. This law enforcement officer has shot and killed four different people in the course of his career as a trooper, and he's still on the job. Wow. Anyway, that is kind of, sort of. In the realm of what I'll be talking about with my distinguished guests. And as I always do with bonus interviews, I ask my distinguished guests to introduce themselves. So distinguished guests, introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Joshua Tupfer. I'm an attorney with the Exoneration Project.
Yes, the Exoneration Project. Before we go further, I don't want to be like the BBC and Alan Dershowitz. So I'm going to talk about what some might say is a conflict of interest. I don't think so, but I just want to point this out. Joshua is partners with the distinguished attorney, Matt Topic, who's representing me in a matter before the city of Chicago. Hey, Topic, get to work. Are you working on my case? What do you think, Josh? Is Topic working on my case right now?
If he's not working on yours, he better be working on some of mine. So, you know, he does a lot of that. So I'll check in with him.
Check in with him. Yes. Matt Topic, as folks know, if you follow the news, is probably the foremost FOIA lawyer in the city of Chicago. And as such, he's leading the charge of my request to get the city of Chicago to show whatever evidence it has. And I don't think it has much, just saying, city of Chicago, regarding the quote unquote exoneration, unquote, of Mayor Rahm Emanuel for the charges that I have leveled against him of covering up evidence of murder of Laquan McDonald. So we'll see what Matt uncovers from the city. That case is really lumbering through the courts, through the process, I should say. All right, Josh, let's get down to business. This is a very somber and sober theme. It is the Ronald Watts story. It's not a happy story, but it is of much relevance in the city of Chicago right now. On my show all the time, we talk about criminal justice issues. We talk about crime in Chicago. We talk about police relationships with the Black community in particular. What can the city do to bring down crime? And so this is just another side. The Ronald Watts story is just another side of this ongoing discussion debate. So why don't you begin by telling us who Ronald Watts is and what he has done. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, who Ronald Watts is right now is a convicted felon, former Chicago police officer convicted of crimes of police corruption while he was on the force. What he did for a decade throughout the 2000s was essentially, in the words of whistleblowing police officers, run his own drug line on the backs of African-American housing project citizens at what was formerly known the Ida B. Wells and other housing projects. And this literally went on for about a decade, where he was profiting and engaging in corruption as part of the drug trade. And as part of what he did in profiting from doing that is would plant evidence and fabricate cases and cause the wrongful convictions of pretty much anyone who got in his way. So whether it was people who were trying to report what he was doing, whether it was people who were perceived competitors of the other drug dealers or someone he was not profiting on, any sorts of or sometimes when he was just in the mood, he would plant evidence on them, fabricate reports, commit perjury, and cause these people to be jailed and ultimately convicted and imprisoned. But he wasn't alone. He did it with one other person who went to prison. Ronald Watts went to prison for 22 months in 2012 when the FBI had a wiretap, a single count, which he pled guilty to. And so did one of his co-conspirators, a guy named Khaled Mohammed. But what we've uncovered over the last 5-6 years is that he wasn't alone. He had roughly 15 or so police officers who were writing all of his false reports for him, testifying in court falsely about all of that for a decade, and also causing these people's wrongful convictions. And all of them remain, most of them, none of them have suffered any accountability. None of them have gotten any accountability, and most of them remain on the force, are getting continue to be paid while on desk duty for years. They've been on desk duty for 4 or 5 years since much of this has been exposed. So basically doing nothing but getting paid and getting our taxpayers to defend them in the 80 or 90 civil lawsuits that are ongoing now. So what has happened since this has been uncovered, since we started looking into this, there's been actually 115 convictions that have been overturned by the Cook County courts, almost all with the agreement of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office after that. And they've all been certified innocent. So their allegations of being framed, made up crimes have all been heard by courts, and they have found that they are telling the truth, so that they are innocent. So 115 times that Watts has been proven to frame someone, and that his police officers who wrote his actual reports made it all up and lied under oath.
All right. You gave me a lot to follow up with. And so let's just follow up with the other officers who are currently on the job. Is it their testimony that they were unaware of the fact that Watts had made up these cases, had fabricated evidence, that they were duped as well as everybody else? Is that what they're saying?
No, quite to the contrary. They all either claim, well, most of the time they claim no memory, but when they claim actual memory, or what they say is everything in their reports is true, that they were unaware or don't even believe that Watts was engaging in any real corruption, and that all of the 115 cases that have been overturned, they're all lying. I guess we've duped the state's attorney's office and the courts. So that is the position they've been taking under oath.
Wow, under oath. And yet you said that the feds have recordings of Watts sort of admitting to what he was doing?
No, what the feds have are what we know of is a confidential informants that they were using that were recording. And so they used one of those, I assume, wiretaps to prosecute Watson Muhammad in for a 2011 case. But what we now know is that it was ongoing for a decade. What the feds actually have is, I have no idea, because the feds won't give it to me and they won't share that information. So, or with the public. So that remains very, very unclear. But let me clarify something. It's not just what the feds have. This was a joint FBI and Chicago Police Department investigation into Watts that was going on since at least 2004, on and off for 2004. I'm sure you remember, Ben, that Rahm Emanuel admitted that there was a code of silence in the Chicago Police Department. What you probably don't recall is that when he made that initial admission, that was in the context of the Watts scandal. It was in the context of a whistleblower's lawsuit. Two Chicago Police Department officers who were whistleblowers in the Watts case, a woman named Shannon Spaulding and another officer named Daniel Echevarria, who sued the city of Chicago, not for retaliating against them for their work in exposing Watts and his team's corruption. So, you know, they doubled down on all of that. So Rahm Emanuel admitted that, yes, there is a very much a code of silence. And that code of silence very much is continuing to play out in the Watts scandal, as we're seeing in these depositions and the testimony of these officers who still will not admit to wrongdoing.
Well, I'll go one step further. It's not a code of silence. A code of silence is when you agree to be quiet about a crime or something that you see going on. As you're telling the story, these police officers are testifying. They're not silent. They're testifying. They're saying that what we see and hear and what a jury believes is not in fact true. So it's, I don't know what it's a code of. It's a code of weirdness. I don't know what to call it. Do you follow? Do you understand the distinction? A code of silence is when you see something going on, you see a little evidence of going on, you turn your back and you walk away, and you pretend it doesn't exist. This is participation, ongoing participation. And it's a subtle distinction, but one I make nonetheless. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts is that's absolutely correct. The line officers who were part and parcel of Watts' corruption for years were committing criminal acts daily, and it is continuing to be ongoing by lying under oath and committing criminal acts. The only thing I'd even nitpick with you is I think the code of silence was very much in play as part of the Watts scandal, in that the higher-ups, the internal affairs division of the Chicago Police Department, they were all very, very much aware of what was going on and didn't do anything about it. This went up to the highest level. And while, think about this for a second. This investigation, this joint investigation with the FBI into Watts and his team's corruption started in 2004, and he wasn't arrested until 2012. So that's 8 years that they knew what was going on, that they had all of this information, and they just let him keep doing it and let this group keep putting Black people in prison and in jail and arresting them falsely over and over again for a decade. And now we're trying to clean it up. So it's just, that's the silence. That's just, it's deafening silence. It's tragic silence. And that's at the very highest levels of the Chicago Police Department. But, and these are the easy cases, right? Like you said, these are criminal officers and the lack of accountability now. We're talking about in 2000, through 2012, this code of silence and this criminal acts going on, but it very much remains. The accountability is, again, these officers who were criminals, who, Lori Lightfoot has called Ronald Watts the John Burge of our time. That's her words. She's before she was Mayor Lightfoot, before she was even candidate Lightfoot, she said, these officers who were part of Watts' team need to be quickly brought to justice. This is back in 2017 in a Sun-Times article. But now she's Mayor Lightfoot, and nothing literally has happened. Instead, we just continue to pay these criminal officers. We continue to defend them in these civil lawsuits with our taxpayer money. And there's not even a hint a smell of accountability, of getting them off the force or disciplining them, or let alone any sort of criminal investigation into their ongoing crimes of perjury.
All right. And if there was a purpose to what Watts and his cohort were up to, it was to keep going their own illicit drug trade. So let me just point out, folks, this 204 would have been in the middle of the so-called war on drugs, which I'm not quite sure if it's, we're still fighting the war on drugs. I know marijuana is legal. You can buy reefer in the state of Illinois. So I'm not quite sure if the war on drugs is ongoing. I have to do a little more investigation and research into that. But it was definitely going on in 2004. I couldn't find one politician in the city of Chicago who would say reefer should be legal, even though most of them were smoking it at the time, or many of them were smoking it. I'm just pointing that out. So talk a little bit, Josh, about what Watts was up to. So while he was planning, creating a fabricated cases against innocent people, what was he doing in terms of drugs?
Yeah, so there's some public FBI reports, like of Watts essentially teaming up with some high-level drug dealers, where he was taking portions of proceeds that they were selling. And I'm not making any sort of allegations that any of the other officers working with him were part of that. But essentially, you know, what these FBI reports say, it's this 2005 FBI report. 2005, CPD is on that report too. There's all these CPD officers there. That essentially Watts, this drug dealer, a guy named Big Shorty or Wilbur Moore, is telling the FBI and the CPD that they're paying Watts daily or monthly or weekly $15,000 to allow them to continue this trade. So Watts is profiting off this. But they name some of the officers, including one who's still on the force, by name as taking parts of those proceeds or being involved in that process. So, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that was going on. You know, Watts had access to all these drugs that he was planting on people, like I said, where people who would try to expose him. So you would have all these examples of people who would go to court and testify for their friends or witnesses or people they saw, said, no, I saw what happened. Watts, you know, he didn't have any drugs. They're lying. They planted on it. Watts would know this, or these people would file what's called citizen complaints or with the Office of Professional Standards or later IPRA. And he would find out about that. Sometimes Watts would even be assigned as the investigating officer into the corruptions of the complaints against him. That's how incompetent these investigative bodies were. Anyway, he would find out about it, and he'd go back and he'd plant evidence on these people to teach them a lesson and say, you can't, you know, I'm in control. I run this. And you try to expose me, you're getting your own case. And sending people to jail is happening routinely.
So he would plant evidence. Talk a little bit about that. What kind of evidence would he plant, and what would the follow-up of him planting the evidence on people be?
I mean, what we would hear story after story, and these are in sworn affidavits, you know, we're upwards of 220, 250 affidavits, sworn statements of saying stuff like this. You know, they're all a little different. They're all very much the same, you know. Literally things where Watts would have drugs in his sleeve, and he would come up and say, this is yours, you're going to jail today, if he detained someone or stopped someone. Or sometimes where the officers have testified that they routinely would just grab everyone up in these buildings when they'd raid these buildings, his team would raid these buildings and just violate Fourth Amendment rights and just detain everyone. And then Watts would go disappear, come back in 10 minutes, and then he would have some drugs on him. And then we're talking about what's called class X amount of drugs. He wasn't just planting marijuana on people or you know, dime bags of cocaine or something. We're talking about multiple levels of grams, 50 bags, 100 bags. And so these would be what's called class X charges, which, save for murders, are the most serious felony in the state of Illinois to this day. And, you know, so you're looking at 6 to 30 year prison sentences that he would be putting that amount of drugs on people, and they would be thrown into the system where, you know, be jailed because it's such serious crime. So they wouldn't be getting out on bond most of the time, and then forced to often take pleas of guilty to lesser offenses just so they could move on with their lives or get out or get a smaller sentence. But, you know, ultimately, of the 115 cases so far that have been exonerated, I think we're upwards. They got sentenced to something like 300 years in prison. So, you know, cut that in half about the amount of time that they did, because it's usually 50% on that. I mean, we're talking about 150 years of prison sentence. That's just for the people who've been exonerated thus far. We have another 80 or so cases pending. So you compare that to Watts doing 22 months. I think we should all be pretty appalled.
And so what kind of drugs was he planting on the residents of Ida B. Wells?
Heroin and cocaine.
So he would plant the heroin and cocaine on residents as a way to get them to not to participate into police investigations of himself, or not to to squeal on the drug dealers that he was also getting money from at the same time. Am I correct? Is that generally what he was up to? It was a twofold purpose: to protect the drug dealers and to protect himself.
I think that's generally correct, although there are examples where he seemed to do it for no reason at all. I have a client named Larry Lomax, for example, who was like visiting. He didn't even live in the building. A lot of them didn't even live in the building where he walked in to visit his like cancer-stricken relative. And he walks in and he's just detained by this team, and he has no idea who any of these people are. And all of a sudden he leaves in handcuffs, and they steal his money and a bunch of money that he had raised to help his cancer stricken relative that he was going to deliver to them. And Watts stole the money and planted evidence on him. So sometimes there was really no rhyme or reason. There's a lot of evidence that came out in the federal case that Watts had some gambling habits, so he was routinely stealing money from people. So sometimes when people didn't pay him off or didn't give him information, he was often seeking information about guns and drugs in the building so he could continue to capitalize on his criminal scheme. So sometimes he would, if people did not give him adequate information or didn't pay him off or enough or shake down or he was unsatisfied, he would plant evidence on them too. So there was all sorts of reasons.
And over 80 people were convicted of crimes that he fabricated. At any point, did any of these 80 people testify in court about what Watts was up to? Did any of them testify in their cases saying, guys, I'm an innocent person being framed by this corrupt, crooked Chicago cop?
So to clarify, just with the numbers, there's been, I think it's 93 individuals who have convictions overturned. And then separately, I have 83 more cases currently pending in the court. So that I have vetted, I have corroborated, that I have affidavits with, so really the number I think that's more accurate is somewhere around 175 and probably more than that. But putting that to the side, yes, the answer is yes. The very first case that sort of got me started on this work was a guy named Ben Baker, and he testified in court in detail of Watts fabricating, telling this what seemed to be in 2005, this outlandish story of Watts framing him because of Ben refusing his shakedown attempt, refusing to pay him off $1,000, and he framed him three different times. Ben told this story in court, and you know, Judge Michael Tooman, you may have heard of him, heard the evidence, and he said, "I don't believe you," but God, you know, sometimes. So Michael Tooman had some great quotes in that case. He said, you know, sometimes, you know, I could be wrong. And sometimes you've seen stories of police officers getting tagged. And I will tell you that if that happens in this case, you know, do not hesitate. Come back to us. Any judge in this building would vacate any convictions based on a corrupt cop. You know, if something like this was going on, you know, we should all be troubled and it would be vacated just like that. So that's what we've done. And unfortunately, it hasn't happened just like that. You know, it's been 5-6 years of work and it's very much ongoing. And, you know, the state's attorney's office is not yet agreed to these 83 pending, although I'm still very hopeful that, in the new year, we'll start to see some more justice for these people, who many of them have been waiting for 4 or 5 years.
I just want to pause in an era to make an editorial comment that reflects my worldview and not necessarily that of Joshua Teffer, attorney at law. MAGA listeners, if you're out there, I know some of you are out there listening to my show. I just want you to think back. Donald John Trump, your president that you love and revere and admire and voted for, would still vote for him if he was on the ballot. And when he was being investigated, remember how he cried out, MAGA? Remember how he cried out how corrupt those investigators were? The FBI was corrupt. The DOJ was corrupt. And you nodded along. You said, that's outrageous that in the United States of America, where we supposedly have a fair and equal criminal justice system, somebody as innocent as Donald John Trump could be the innocent victim of corrupt investigators. MAGA, I ask you, I implore you, where are you in the matter of Ben Baker, MAGA? In fact, I'll bet you some of those police officers who right now are testifying on behalf of Ronald Watts are MAGA supporters. Just saying, MAGA, I think you should give Ben Bakers of the world the same kind of consideration you give Donald John Trump of the world. Just had to go on that editorial aside, Joshua. I apologize for interrupting our narrative.
No, I mean, I think it's totally relevant, though. I mean, not to, I know you want to move on, but it's these are the easy cases. I think that's the ultimate point, right? I mean, like, these are ones everybody agrees that this is a super corrupt cop. John Burge of our time. I mean, every appellate decision, every court decision, the prosecutors. I mean, there's just really no dispute. And it's still, like, not, I mean, no accountability for these officers. And it's still, you know, no justice for half of these victims, you know, 83 victims for so long. I mean, these should be the easy ones. They're not even a debate about whether these officers were corrupt. A couple of them went to prison.
All right. Let me go back to something you said. Judge Michael Tooman gave Ben Baker these words of wisdom where he said, I don't believe you, but if what you're saying is true, I'm outraged. I'm paraphrasing what you said. So you tell me that Ben Baker had a bench trial? He didn't have a jury trial?
Yeah, he had a bench trial. That's correct.
Why would excuse me. I know everybody's a lawyer in their minds. And I'm not blaming Ben Baker for the wrongs he suffered. But what kind of lawyer would recommend that is a bench trial? I only thought bench trials were for like really well-connected, clouded people. Do you follow what I'm saying? Who like kind of know the judge. If I'm just an ordinary guy from Ida B. Wells, I don't want a bench trial. I want a jury trial in Cook County. Joshua, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we're getting a little off target. I mean, I think there's a lot of reasons where I might take a bench trial for any variety of reasons sometimes. So, for example, remember I told you about that FBI report with Big Shorty or Wilbur Moore that was public, that was in Ben Baker's court file. And the judge said, you know, I'm not going to allow the jury to hear that evidence. It's not relevant enough to this case. So,
I thought you said he's not going to allow the jury to hear I thought it was a bench trial.
It was a bench trial, but I guess my point is he made a pre-trial ruling before it was determined whether it was a bench or a jury trial, that evidence wasn't going to come into evidence, let's say. So there may be a rationale to be like, okay, well, if the jury's not going to hear it, we know the judge actually saw it, so he'll still have it in his mind and he'll know, even if it doesn't meet the rules of evidence or this judge decided it doesn't meet the rule of evidence. I mean, putting aside whether I think that decision was correct, which I don't, but, you know, that could be a rationale for taking a bench trial. So, you know, I mean, I have cases where I have chosen to take a bench trial, and Ben, I do not have any clout whatsoever.
All right, I was just going to say, wow, could you imagine if the judge in Wisconsin who oversaw Kyle Rittenhouse's trial was as tough with incriminating evidence as this judge? Unbelievable. I would say I would have a jury trial on that one. I know we're on a tangent, but just goes to show you what a black person from Ida B. Wells is up against, Joshua. Because you're a black person from Ida B. Wells, you're automatically guilty of something, okay, in the minds of white people. I'm just saying that, Joshua, based on the narrative you're giving. The judge rules. You got a sworn testimony that this cop is crooked, and the leader of the drug dealing gang in the area is saying he's on the take. And the freaking judge goes, well, it's not relevant to this case. Duh, judge. I think it's the whole freaking case. I feel like Al Pacino in Justice for All. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. It was way before your time. The whole system's out of order. But it just, it seems to me, Joshua, that like in the minds of the judges and the prosecutors and the cops, if you're black and you're from Ida B. Wells, it's you're guilty of something. I don't know if you're guilty of this, but you're guilty of something, so you're going to pay for it. Am I being unfair to the judges, the lawyers, the cops in the criminal justice system?
I mean, the system failed this Watch scandal beyond belief. I mean, beyond belief. I mean, they, these individuals were telling judges, they were telling there were prosecutors, the public integrity unit of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office was involved in this investigation of Watch. They knew what was going on. You know, I mean, all I did was gather up a bunch of documents that everyone else had already created to realize the scope of the scandal that and started talking to the people who were the victims. And so all that could have and should have and maybe it could have and should have been done by the key players of the criminal justice system at the time. And it just wasn't. I mean, of course, everyone absolutely failed the Watch victims for so long. There was a gestalt reaction to believe police officers, not to believe black people, people in poverty, that they're lying. I mean, if any lesson has been learned, I mean, you know, people often admit when they do wrongdoing. I mean, you know, a lot of guilty pleas are true. People truly confess the crime. When you're having these allegations that are coming forward over and over and over again from different sources, from different people all the time about these misdeeds of police officers, I mean, you got to pay attention to that. I mean, the investigations into this are just, they weren't investigations. They were cover-ups. They were laughable. Nobody was interested in finding the truth. And that's because, yes, these people were disposable people from their mind because they were black and they were poor. And they, in their minds, they were drug dealers or criminals anyway.
All right. You mentioned that all you did was gather up documents. I think you're being a little modest there, but why don't you talk about your own involvement? How did you get involved in this matter, and when did you get involved?
Sure. So I came over to the Exoneration Project in 2015. I had worked at the Center on Wrongful Convictions for 7 years before that, and I inherited the case. I mentioned it, Ben Baker. And, you know, mostly what I do for a living is, you know, someone says they're in prison and they're innocent, and I reinvestigate that case. And if I can prove it, you know, I go to court and try to win those cases. So that's essentially what I did for Ben Baker. And, you know, I got that case and I was like, wow, he testified to this and now this guy's in prison. Why is Ben Baker's? Now, Ronald Watts went to prison for the same thing that Ben Baker said happened to him 7 years before Watts went to prison. Why is Ben Baker still in prison? So I sort of had to put the puzzle pieces together and say, hey, it wasn't just Watts. It was this team of officers who didn't get federal convictions. They were involved, and that, you know, this was ongoing back in 2005, not just 2011 when Watts was caught. So I sort of put together all those pieces. And when I did that, you know, I went to court for Ben Baker, gathered up all this evidence, the whistleblower lawsuits, these things that Shannon Spaulding and Danielle Chavarri were saying and other whistleblowers, and said, look, you know, what Ben Baker said was true. We can prove it. All these things the federal prosecutor said in their case against Watts and Muhammad and saying how it was ongoing forever. So I put that all before the court. And, you know, generally, my work takes a really long time. You file something in court, you know, you're talking years, sometimes a decade before you even get to a hearing or something like that, because the last thing people want to do is revisit old cases when, I don't know if you know, but there's a lot of crime that's going on currently in Chicago that people are worried about. So anyway, what happened actually in this is 29 days later, the prosecutors agreed with me and dismissed the case entirely against Ben Baker, and he walked out of prison. So that was back in January of 2016. And then things just started to snowball a little bit. That got some news coverage, and people just started writing me and saying, hey, I saw that about Ben. That happened to me too. But all these people were out of custody. And like I said, normally what I do is I represent people who are in prison for things they didn't do. So I was not really paying that much attention to it. I was kind of ignoring it until I just couldn't ignore it anymore. And all of a sudden, I had a few other smaller cases. Actually, Ben Baker's wife, Clarissa Glenn, was also framed. I took on that case. Her case was dismissed in like 6 days after I filed because she said it made many of the same outcries. She was written about in this beautiful article in The New Yorker by Jennifer Gonerman about Clarissa Glenn. Anyway, so I took on that case. And then again, eventually I filed 18 cases in a petition in September of 2017. It was on behalf of 15 individuals. So some of them had multiple times they were framed. And I filed that in court in September of 2017. And 2 months later, State's Attorney Fox agreed to dismiss all 18 of those cases. So that was in November of 2017. And it was the first mass exoneration in the history of Cook County. Nothing like that had ever really happened. I don't think anyone had ever really filed anything like that before. All those people had long served their time. They were out of custody. But it was a pretty great moment. And I thought like a real turning point. And so for the next 4 years, I was working with the state's attorney's office, identifying more cases, more people coming to me saying this happened to them, vetting more cases. And over that time, you know, 60, 70 more cases, another attorney's involved, a guy by the name of Joel Flaxman. So him and our cases were being reviewed and some dismissed, but things really, really started to slow down. I repeatedly told the state's attorney's office that I had many, many more that I was sitting and waiting. And so I eventually filed these 88 more, or actually 100 more cases for 88 more people. Me and Mr. Flaxman did in July of this year. So that's what happened since July. 5 more of those have been agreed to. So we're down to 83 more cases that we have pending. And we're back in court right after the new year, January 3rd. We'll see what happens.
All right, let me just go back to Ben Baker for a moment. So when you said Watts was convicted and sent to prison in 2012, did I get that right? 2012?
I think I got that wrong. He was arrested in February 2012, and I think he was convicted in 2013. He pled guilty in 2013.
He pled guilty. Okay.
He did, yes.
Okay, just think about that, ladies and gentlemen. In 2013, Ronald Watts pled guilty. Ben Baker was in prison at the time, and he still was in prison. It wasn't like, so folks, just think about this. The man pled guilty to fabricating cases against innocent people. And the innocent people who had cases fabricated against were still in prison. Nobody in the system. I mean, it's just, it's so twisted. Nobody in the system said, hey, you know, this guy just pled guilty to fabricating cases against innocent people who are in prison. Nobody said, hey, maybe we should let those innocent people out of prison. Josh, am I correct in what I just said?
To correct the record only slightly, he pled guilty to taking a bribe. But okay. The evidence presented in the federal case was that he was routinely fabricating evidence and sentencing people. But everything is just absolutely correct. And it's my sort of been my life mission since I've started this is, you know, there's no audit. No one ever does this. And I mean, we can fault the Cook County and the Chicago criminal justice system, but this is true anywhere you look. When there is like systemic, when a police officer is identified as a corrupt police officer, there is nobody that goes back and says, wait, let's fix all these other problems. Let's audit what happened to them. No one does it. And that's basically what we did and what we should be doing. And I've tried to start doing it on some of these other police scandals that are going on. But again, like these are the easy ones. I mean, think back to what Judge Tuman said. He said, if this guy gets tagged, that was the word he used, and like, don't hesitate, come back. And Ben Baker, before he ever knew me, did hire an attorney when Ronald Watts got tagged. And he did file something in court. And you want to know what happened? It didn't go to Judge Tooman. It got thrown out by some other judge because they're like, no, we don't care. And so it took really putting it together and putting all the pieces together and saying, you know, you can't ignore this.
Oh, what a freaking system, man. It's just really upsetting. And it just goes back to, the story I'm pursuing, with Topic's help, where, Joe Ferguson, the former inspector general, said there was no evidence that Mayor Rahm was covering anything up. And Mayor Rahm says, I was waiting for the, investigations to clear, to be finished. I mean, it's so absurd. Everyone in Chicago knows there was no legitimate investigation into the shooting of Laquan McDonald. Everybody knows that, whether they'll admit it or not. You know what I'm saying, Josh? Whether they'll say it or they're going to be politically correct in the real ways people are politically correct in the city of Chicago, which is they cover up the misdeeds of powerful people. You know, I doubt. But this just underscores the point. Like, the man pled guilty to taking a bribe, a gentleman who was in court, who had said this is what went down, was allowed to stay in jail for 3 more years. Oh, all right. What a lot of people see are headlines from time to time about payoffs, but not payoffs, payouts, whatever you call it. Like, finally an exonerated person gets some money from the city or the county or the state or what have you for being falsely convicted of a crime he didn't do. Has this been the case for any of the people sent to prison because of Ronald Watts?
Yes and no. So what happens is, because of the horrendous history of wrongful convictions in the city of Chicago and Illinois, a statutory scheme was passed where you could pursue a certificate of innocence. And that certificate of innocence entitles you to, if you get one, a minimal amount of statutory compensation. So every one of the Watts exonerees, everyone who's had their convictions overturned, the 90 of the 115 convictions, has almost all of them have received, and if they haven't, hopefully they will later this month or later next month, received a certificate of innocence. And so those people have gotten between $20,000 or $90,000 or so, mostly, for their wrongful convictions for those cases. But separately, they have, most of them, if not all of them, have pending lawsuits against Watts and the city of Chicago and the other officers who were involved in this that have been ongoing for years and years and years. And the city of Chicago hires outside lawyers to defend that. Watts gets his own lawyer. Muhammad, the other guy who went to prison, gets his own group of lawyers. And then all the other officers who are still on the force get their own lawyer. The city gets their own outside lawyer. So you got, and then there's these whistleblower officers who get their own lawyers. So we got 5 sets of law firms who are getting paid by you, Ben Jarofsky, and us to defend against these lawsuits that, you know, Mayor Lightfoot told us were indefensible, that are indefensible. And that, you know, I think I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but Matt Topic of FOIA helped us FOIA some of that stuff. And, you know, I mean, the payment just to the lawyers, you know, and we're looking at, I think it's probably up to like $6 or $7 or $8 million that these people have been paid to defend these cases so far. Not to mention continuing to pay the officers for not working, for being on desk duty, as our civilian Office of Police Accountability, which I haven't even talked about yet, has been investigating for 4 years whether or not they engaged in any misconduct and should be disciplined, even though everyone knows that they engaged in misconduct and have been disciplined because it's already been acknowledged. So that report, their initial report, COPA's initial report 4 years after this all started to be exposed, was delivered to the city of Chicago and the Chicago police in March of 2021 The superintendent had 90 days at most to review what COPA's report. That passed in June, at which point it was supposed to be public, and it is not public. No one knows what this COPA report says, and Matt Topic is my lawyer for that FOIA lawsuit in trying to make that public, which it long ago should have been.
I think Matt Topic must have 5 billion cases, FOIA cases, before the city. I'm just one of many. He is to FOIA cases what McDonald's is to hamburgers. All right. We've mentioned the mayor a few times, and the mayor as a candidate and what she pledged, and the mayor as the mayor and what she's done. So I know you're not Gordon Lightfoot, is that his name? The folk singer who had a song called If I Could Read Your Mind. I know you don't have the ability to read the mayor's mind, but in your humble opinion, and it's merely a speculative opinion, why do mayors change tune when they get elected? Well, this is the first time I believe this kind of police misconduct has ever been an issue in a mayoral race. In 2011 and 15, when Mayor Rahm ran, it was, I don't recall Mayor Rahm ever talking about these kinds of things. But by 2019, that was post Laquan McDonald, the issue of police misconduct was an issue. It was part of the reason why Lori Lightfoot could establish herself as a more or less credible reformer in the run for mayor against Tony Preckwinkle. And then she's in office, she changes. So why the change? Why do people who run as reformers, vowing to clean up a system, once they get into office, start playing the same old games?
Yeah, I mean, this is as humble as a humble opinion can get, because, I mean, I don't know. I don't know Mayor Lightfoot. You know, I guess I just go back to, like, I don't know if there's absolute ill intent on every one of the actors. I think certainly some of them are. I mean, there's really, really bad people like Watts and, you know, lots of other police officers that I sue or I fight against to get convictions overturned. But then there's sort of this, and what happened in the Watts scandal, and I'm going to get back to your question specifically, is, you know, like I said, the Cook County State's Attorney had their own investigation. The Chicago Police Department had their investigation, FBI investigation, but no one was putting it all together. No one cared enough. There's just lethargy or disinterest or doesn't care enough. And I guess if I were to speculate, I think that's what it is. I mean, it's just easier not to do anything about it. It's easier not to have the headlines of we're going to get rid of all these cases and give these people, you know, compensate them for fairly for what happened to them. And because that's going to be a gigantic headline of a gigantic sum of money, because this was a gigantic, enormous, horrible scandal and a horrible thing that happened to so many people. So, you know, if I were the mayor, I would personally frame it and say, you know, I'm the hero here. I care. This is the easy one. These are known corrupt police officers. Let Black Lives Matter. I'm showing you that Black Lives Matter, because this shouldn't have happened to these Black lives and all these people we harmed. And I'm going to do my part to rectify it. But, you know, it's easier to push that off to the next administration or the next people to deal with a scandal of this magnitude. And the truth is, I mean, you know, Ben, I would have loved to come and talk on this show about this 2-3 years ago. I mean, the Chicago public's not talking about this, so it's easy for them to ignore it. There's no video. There's no Laquan McDonald video. This does not capture the public's attention. You know, every time there's a group or a mass exoneration, we, you know, you get a little news buzz and it gets in the paper. But, you know, it doesn't happen. It doesn't capture the attention, the sustained attention away when you have video or something along those lines. So it's easy to kick the can down the road.
It is. And I recall an essay that ran in the Chicago Tribune about 2 weeks ago by the lawyer who used to be the corporation counsel for Mayor Lori Lightfoot. I can't remember the gentleman's name, so I humbly apologize to you, sir. He was the one.
Mark Flessner.
Man, you know, very well done. You just pulled that one out of nowhere. So Mark Flessner was the lawyer that Lori Lightfoot bounced. She blamed the engineer Young thing on him, and he got fired. Or not fired. I don't know if he quit or got fired. Whatever. He's no longer the corporation counsel. Point is, Angela Young, of course, was a West Side resident. The police raided her home. She had been she just stepped out of the shower. She was naked. And it took them quite a while to figure out that she had nothing to do with whatever they were looking for. Their warrant had the wrong address. I would have thought it would be immediately obvious to anybody when a naked woman walks out of her bathroom after taking a shower that she's innocent, but that's just me. So anyway, Flessner wrote this essay, Josh, for in a tribute. I don't know if you saw it, where he was mad at Lori Lightfoot for the settlement they gave with Engineer Young, over $2 million. And he said, I told her, this is a winnable case for us. We could have gotten off. I'm sorry.
50 grand.
50 grand. Like, 50 grand. See, yeah. So this is well, heart of hearts, they're like acting like they're fiduciaries for the taxpayers, and you know they're looking out for the taxpayer. That's how I'm like, man, I don't know what to say. The only time it seems to be any like stand up for the taxpayers of Chicago in a matter like this is at the bottom line when it comes to dealing out some kind of judgment settlement with the person who was punished. Where was all that standing up for the taxpayers from roughly 2005 when the drug dealer Shorty gave his deposition or whatever it was, his affidavit to the feds, and 2016 before somebody let him out? Where was anybody standing up for the taxpayers, Josh?
I know. I mean, you could have stopped this so long ago. And I mean, and like I said, there's five outside firms who every day this isn't settled or profiting off of it. So they have zero motivation to try to end this, you know, and it really makes no sense. There needs to be some smart mind. I mean, to take a hit of some gigantic number that makes the newspaper of this settlement would save the city so much money down the road. I mean, it's just unwinnable. I mean, there is unwinnable case. Maybe they win one of the 95 cases that are going to be more. That are going to be 150 cases. They're not going to win all 150 of these cases. And so, you know, you're just going to keep paying and defend outside lawyers and keep paying these officer salaries until it's just going to continue to add up. But again, it's easier to kick it down the road. But Ben, you know, maybe me coming on this podcast will bring renewed attention to the Chicago media about this Watts scandal, and it will be the next Laquan McDonald.
Yeah. By the way, has Judge Toobin reached out to Ben Baker, as far as you know? I mean, he said if it turns out that you're right, you know, what do you say? I'll be outraged or whatever. Has he reached out to him and sent him a card or anything?
So what happened was Clarissa Glenn, who was the woman I mentioned, who was, you know, Ben's longtime partner and wife, you know, she was there for all this. She watched it happen. I mean, she's a real true hero in all this, and I haven't mentioned her name enough. But when Watts got tagged, what she did, she's not a lawyer. What she did is she wrote Judge Michael Toobin a letter and said, hey, see this? He got tagged. And I'll get, you know, Judge Toobin, you know, he wasn't assigned to the case. He was, I think, probably in the juvenile. I don't know where he was then, whatever. And what he did write her back. He wrote her back and said, I can't help you, but get yourself a lawyer or something along those lines.
I can't help you. You're a judge.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. You know, she found a lawyer who didn't help her either. And then Clarissa and Ben fell in my lap, and luckily I was able to help him. So I'm glad for them.
Man, well, I can't help you. I'm a judge. I'm only a judge. I mean, I could say that. I'm just this poor reader writer who is doing a podcast from my attic. I literally, there's only so much I can do, but I don't know. maybe a Cook County judge. Maybe I'm overestimating the amount of authority they have, Cook County judges.
Well, it's because the, I know I'm going too long, but the head investigator at the Public Integrity Unit of the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, who was running the investigation and a watchman, Ben, was telling him that this all happened. He's now a judge, too. I reached out to him to see if he would help me. He ignored my calls when I was trying to get on this. So, like I said, it's just easier for everyone not to do anything and not be involved. But I like to be involved.
All right. We'll close. Try to be on something resembling a bright side. Is there any ray of hope or optimism as we head into a new calendar year on this matters that have been going on for close to 20 years, over 20 years, I guess it goes back. So is there anything that you want to close by saying, well, I'm optimistic about XYZ. It's now your opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I will have two things that I'm optimistic about. One is I do believe that I have turned a corner with the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and I do believe that they understand, and I speak of Kim Fox directly. I think she understands now that the seriousness of this matter. She says all the right things every time there are exonerations, and I do believe that she is focused her attention on these 83 pending cases, and I do believe we're going to see a level of justice for some of these people fairly quickly. So I am optimistic for many of my clients who still have their convictions intact. That optimism does not extend to the city of Chicago and the individuals who deserve to be compensated by any stretch. The second thing I am optimistic about, and this, I bring this in because you promised me I would get a minute to talk about this, is my beloved Chicago Bulls.
Okay.
And the excitement that I get to watch them continuing in this winter and watching. It's just fun to watch DeMar DeRozan and Lonzo Ball and Zach LaVine. So I wanted to be able to get to say that.
All right. And I share your optimism on that front as well. Against all logic and reason, I went to the Bulls game last night, even in the middle of COVID. I had like 50 masks on and a raincoat. And I still think COVID penetrated and I'll get sick in about 5. That's how insane I am. But yes, this is our crazy times. And it is always enjoyable to have a little diversion from the madness. And I'll put you in this. Our beloved Chicago Bulls are giving us a little diversion from the utter madness of our times. Josh, thanks so much for taking time to come and talk to me. And I'll check in with you again in a few months. Bring you back to see what updates you have, and maybe there'll be even more good news on that front in a few months. All right.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
All right. That's Joshua Teffer. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.